97.1 FM Talk Podcast. 97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
I am for defunding the police, and for me, it's a reallocation of funds.
It does not appear she has made any reasonable efforts to prevent the resulting chaos.
This didn't work out.
The Biden administration knows what it needs to do, and it says, well, we'll do anything except what works. It's a special kind of stupid.
God save the Queen, man.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Thursday has actually picked up some speed, so just know that we are less than 24 hours out from a major impact, actually less than 12 hours out, so that's going to happen. Just south of the eye wall is going to likely lead to the most significant storm surge.
This is going to be a storm of historic proportions with wind, water, and rain.
It certainly doesn't look good. Sue Thomas is back with us this afternoon. Fred, the Hall of Famer, as well. We had your friend Steve Jervey on yesterday, and he was great from Tampa. And he's kind of, you know, in the target zone right now. The only good news is he said he was in Zone C. A, B are evacuation areas, and he didn't have to get out, Sue.
Well, he's a meteorologist in Florida, so you can imagine what his place is. It is not on the beach, and he's got it fortified in every possible way. And he's, you know, if you go to his house, he'll say, okay, and here's, we've got this, just in case the water comes up. So he is prepared as one can be.
Well, and you know, we have a couple of people that are going to join us here this afternoon. Fred, do we have someone who's trying to ride this thing out as
We're
well?
Going to get her tomorrow.
Okay, because that doesn't seem like a smart thing to do. It really doesn't at this point. We do have Ryan Gable this afternoon. He's the captain of Sea Trek 1. And that's a charter boat near Fort Myers. He moved his vessel upriver. Now, is this the guy that we talked to with Ian a couple years ago, or a different guy?
Oh, he rode out Ian and Helene in the boat, so I think that is him.
Okay, yeah. And he had quite a story from Ian a couple years ago. And Deborah Donzi is the one who owns the boat, and she lives here in the St. Louis area. So we'll hook up with Ryan in the 4 o'clock hour and also cover the hurricane from different perspectives this afternoon. Dave Murray's going to join us a little bit after 4:07 as well. Hopefully kill me this afternoon. He's busy. We're going to see if he can jump on with us. We haven't been able to. Fred's trying to get a hold of him.
It's fluid. Let's say it's fluid.
Well, in fairness, that happens with Brian. I mean, the guy is working so much, but usually we can pin him down by the time that the show starts, and that has not happened today. Sue, how was jury duty yesterday?
Well, here's the good news. They have redone it in the city of St. Louis. Here's what they used to do. They would call, and mind you, all of us who go to jury duty in the city have been there 80,000 times before you, because you go, we're professionals. You go every 3 years. So instead of calling you on Monday in this huge group and you sit there for 2 days if you don't get called, they have broken it up into small groups. So I didn't go until Tuesday. And when I sat down, they were super friendly and they were thanking us for being there. But then I got called in the first group and we went upstairs for voir dire, which I only know because I watched the TV show Bull, what that means. And they bring us into the courtroom, and it turns out I've never been on a criminal trial, but that's what this was.
You've only been called like for civil cases.
Correct.
Interesting.
And they have you fill out a form. Have you ever been on a jury? Before you even get there, you do it online. Have you been a foreman? And I'm like, yep.
Oh,
I hope that doesn't mean anything, like I should do it again.
And it does.
Well, we sat there, and I can't even say what it is now until the trial is over, because I was a potential jurist. But you sit there and they ask questions of all of you to try to, you know, pick out, the prosecution does and the defense does, and they try to narrow it down. So they kept us there, sent us out to lunch, brought us back in, and then filled in the jury thing. And you just sit there going, please don't be me. Please don't be me. And it wasn't. But yeah, they sat a jury for it, and it's a criminal trial that started. They were supposed to start maybe late yesterday when they let the rest of us go.
But you're not supposed to say anything about it?
Uh-uh.
Why not? I mean, if you get arrested or something, held in contempt, it'd be good for the show. Joe Holland would likely write about it at the Post-Dispatch. You got to think about the show every once in a while, Sue. I'm just going to say. Come on. Step up your game.
Let me just say this. I am glad not to be on it. And good luck to those who are. And you do want a jury of your peers, but boy, man, that's serious. And they are so much more. It used to be we'd go and watch like a video of Robin Smith tell us stuff, and she was slightly angry. And now it's
Robin Smith, the former Channel 4.
Yeah, former Channel 4, and then maybe a little bit of Julius Hunter. And but now they really have streamlined it as best they can.
Well, look at that. That's good to know. Yeah. It's been a while. I said, you know, I went a couple of times when I lived in the city, and then I've gotten out of it in the county at least once, and I don't remember ever being called again. So I think one time, and actually that might have been Jeffco. It might not even been because I lived in Jeffco before I moved back to St. Louis County.
I gotcha.
So that's interesting. Well, we're glad you're back. We missed you yesterday. We did cover quite a bit related to CBS News and some things that happened. I think you're going to find this interesting. We're going to get back into it this afternoon. Have you heard anything about this Tony DeCoppola thing?
No, I don't know anything.
Okay, this is pretty good, and I'm not going to spend too much time on it now because we did it during the monologue, but there's a guy by the name of Ta-Nehisi Coates, who's a liberal, you know, activist, claims to be a journalist, has been a left-winger for many years, did an interview on his new book about Israel, which, by the way, doesn't mention Hamas at all. Like, Hamas isn't mentioned. Iran isn't mentioned. None of this stuff. So Tony DeCoppola, who is the, you know, CBS morning show co-host with Gayle King. By the way, Gayle King is looking like she's 90 years old. Well, I was watching this clip. When I was pulling that clip yesterday, Fred, I'm not even making this up. I kept thinking, who's that old woman sitting next to Tony? It was Gayle King. She didn't look as good. I don't watch that show, so maybe it's happened over time. You know, anyway.
I do know what you're talking about now because I did hear part of that later. And it's very interesting. How dare they actually do real balanced news?
Right. Well, so what happened was is he did the interview, and then the higher-ups on CBS, they did a conference call to talk to their, you know, reporters to complain about all this, and it sounded like this.
You know, the legacy of CBS News is built on a foundation of neutrality. And we owe it to those who came before us, to ourselves and our viewers, to maintain that standard to the best of our ability.
I mean, that's just comical. It really is. Neutrality on CBS News. This is the same, you know, group that hosted last week's vice presidential debate. Did you watch that? I'd love to ask that woman who runs the news division that question. Wait, how are you actually ripping on Tony DeCoppola because little young progressive, you know, do-gooders in your newsroom said, we didn't like Tony's question of Ta-Nehisi, right? So that really is kind of amazing when you think about it. And that's the reason that they want to take. That's the reason that they want to take him out. But everybody else gets to do what they want. Now, here's the other thing that was kind of interesting about this, Sue. And, you know, I've mentioned Bill Whitaker's name quite a bit at 60 Minutes. And I've said you can't really trust 60 Minutes because we've kind of seen examples of that here in St. Louis with Mr. Whitaker in particular doing a story about Kim Gardner.
Yep.
That was completely unfair to our area. And they never came back and rectified that when she was finally booted out of office. But he sits down with Kamala, actually asked her some tough questions the other night. And, and I don't know that she did very
answer.
Well. That. Now,
I mean,
last night, she was on Stephen Colbert's show.
You asked for Miller Highlight. You asked for Miller Highlight.
Okay, the last time I had beer was at a baseball game with Doug.
Cheers. That tastes like the beautiful city of Milwaukee,
the
Wisconsin.
Champagne and beer.
Well, it's weird that she's not drinking Budweiser or Busch Light because Missouri's not a swing state like Wisconsin. So that seems rather convenient. Stephen asked a question last night.
You are a member of the president administration. Mm-hmm. Under a Harris administration, what would the major changes be and what would stay the same?
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm obviously not Joe Biden.
I know.
And so that would be one change in terms of.
Yes.
But also, I think it's important to say with, you know, 28 days to go, I'm not Donald Trump.
Okay. I don't even know. That's her answer.
And people clap. I'm like, what is happening?
I don't know. I really don't know at this point. I'm going to try to hold on to hope here, Sue. I really am. You know, I've been thinking about this race for a long time. We all have been thinking about this race. We are now less than 4 weeks away from Election Day. People are voting right now. This week, they're starting to really vote in some areas. But I'm this may be bad news for Trump because my gut checks are usually very, very wrong. But I am feeling that there is momentum in his direction. Just if for no other reason, just looking at the country right now and how misguided it's been over the last few years. And people know that. They feel the difference when it comes to crime, certainly the economy. They try to spin this every way they can. It tells, and I think it should tell us a lot, that Harris is going on and doing more interviews because I think she has to. There has been, you know, feedback in the polling that shows that people don't really know who she is and they don't trust her. So now she's out. And you can't, from a political strategy standpoint, you can't necessarily fault her for going on the comfortable shows because they know what they're doing. They're trying to get, you know, those audiences engaged, even though you might be able to say, look, those people are voting for Harris and Biden anyway. Well, They're not voting for Trump, maybe, but that doesn't mean they're going to show up on Election Day. So turnout is a big part of the entire equation. But, you know, one of the things that they're doing right now, and I don't think it's going to work. They're trying to claim, the administration is, oh, here, this is good. They did this a couple hours ago. They did this FEMA briefing. And during the FEMA briefing, they aired this on Fox Live. You had Harris on the phone. It was a video thing. And Biden as well. So you had the FEMA directors and all the emergency management people giving updates on the hurricane, on Milton. And then every once in a while, Harris would ask a question or Joe would ask a question. They were the dumbest questions because I don't even know if they were really paying attention. They just wanted to make sure that their voice was in there. Now, at one point, I don't know what to make of this because there was a point where she sort of, she kind of covers her mouth here. This is what it sounds
like. We really got to watch those areas and those live communities. Broadcast. So it takes quite a while for that water to...
You can hear in the background say it's a live broadcast. Some people are saying, well, she's being fed the questions, et cetera. I don't know about that. That just could have been a distraction. But it was hilarious. And, you know, Sue, one thing that this reminded me of when I was watching the president and the vice president today with FEMA is how much they did that a few weeks ago with Helene. Remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wait.
Oh, I'm
no,
sorry.
If you missed anything, podcast, The Mark Reardon Show.
Stop it. That was not supposed to happen there. My goodness. I was supposed to do this. I was looking for this thing here. Yeah. That did not happen. So the mantra now is about disinformation. That's what they're saying. Anything that you've heard about a lapse in the response or not a prompt response by the federal government. Well, that's just disinformation. That is just misinformation. Uh-huh. You got Mayorkas out there saying this. You have Harris and Biden as well. Here's Mayorkas.
That false information is only hurting survivors in need of help. And it is also hurting the first responders who are so bravely risking their lives to deliver that help.
Now, one thing that they're pointing to, and unfortunately, I'm going to have to agree on this one, and I don't really understand it. I've avoided over the years. There's certain members of Congress that I think are crazy. Mary Miller in Illinois is one of them. All right. Every once in a while, she's on the right side of the issues, but she's kind of crazy. The people in Illinois don't like me to say that, but she's crazy. So is Marjorie Taylor Greene. And, you know, I like her every once in a while because she stands up on the right issues and she has a hell of a workout routine. She really does. I'm impressed by that. They did a story on her on 60 Minutes and she's got guns that are bigger than mine, which, by the way, for those of you listening and you haven't seen me, it wouldn't be too difficult to do. Right. But Marjorie Taylor Greene, and this is the other thing. Maybe some of you can help me out there. OK, maybe some of you can help me. I'm always looking for a different side of the story. Right. I really am. Biden Harris say something. Wait a second. I'm going to try to check that. My gut tells me that when things don't make sense, there has to be more to the story. And with Trump, it's almost always the case. And a couple of perfect examples would be what happened at the debate with their eating and cats and dogs. He has difficulty sort of expanding on something like that and explaining it in a concise fashion because it's a little difficult to do that. And he throws that out there and everybody jumps on it
right.
And does stuff like that, right? Well, that's something that happens certainly with misinterpretation of Trump. And maybe there's no better example than Charlottesville, right? Because the very fine people thing was completely taken out of context. So maybe this was taken out of context. I don't know. I really don't. But have you heard this? She thinks that, here's her tweet. I'll just read her tweet from October 7th, 7:26 p.m. Climate change is the new COVID, which, by the way, I don't disagree with that. Ask your government if the weather is manipulated or controlled. Did you ever give permission to them to do it? Are you paying for it? Of course you are. I don't know what. So she tweets something out and she says that this happened on CBS 9 years ago, that they were and there's a Norm O'Donnell clip where they're talking about how lasers were controlling the weather. I don't know a whole lot about that, but she sort of doubles down on these conspiracy theories. Maybe someone can guide me into information from MGT that doesn't make her look crazy, because that makes her look crazy. And by the way, it makes Republicans look ridiculous because it gives Harris and Biden the opportunity to say, look at these kooks. When they're the kooks, we know that. Look at these kooks on the right. They think that the government is somehow controlling and manipulating the weather and causing Category 4 and 5 hurricanes. It's nonsense. And she should realize that. If she's got half a brain, she should realize that saying things like that, especially 4 weeks before an election, is not going to help you very much. I don't know what the win is there. But again, she's crazy. Now, one more crazy story here for us this afternoon before we get to, I think John Lott's coming up here. This is a University of Kansas, a KU down the road there, and not exactly down the road, Lawrence, Kansas, not too far away from here, would be about 5 hours, just west of Kansas City. Here's what this professor said to his class this week.
Guys are smarter than girls. You got some serious problems. That's what frustrates me. There are going to be some males in our society that will refuse to vote for a potential female president because they don't think females are smart enough to be president. We could line all those guys up and shoot them. They clearly don't understand the way the world works. Did I say that? Scratch that from the recording. I don't want the deans hearing that I said that.
Well, unfortunately, it went viral, and the deans have heard it. And here's the statement from the University of Kansas via their ex, formerly Twitter, a statement from the university regarding a classroom video. The university is aware of a classroom video in which an instructor made an inappropriate reference to violence. The instructor is being placed on administrative leave pending further investigation. The instructor, this is my favorite part, the instructor offers his sincerest apologies and deeply regrets the situation. Are you kidding me? You could hear his tone right there.
Exactly.
One thing we know for sure is that he doesn't deeply regret anything unless his ass is canned. Then he might deeply regret, you know, joking about it, right? Saying, oh, I don't want it on the tape. They say his intent was to emphasize his advocacy for women's rights and equality. Sure it was, dude. And he recognizes that he did a very poor job of doing so. Well, on that, I'm going to agree. The university has established a process for situations like this and will follow that process. Now, I get that you have to have some sort of due process when you're an elite professor sure. at a university. But you know what? The process should be here. Your ass is canned. Find another job, hopefully not in academia, but they'll all protect him. They love this stuff. So they'll kind of find a way to say, oh, he went through the process. He's so sorry about this. We're going to let him indoctrinate the students further. For the record, Fred did an outstanding job with Sue's News yesterday,
by the way.
And he, you know what we were thinking, though? We got young Ethan, our new producer here. And I think Ethan, he's got a little experience on the air. I think he can do Sue's News.
Yeah, he could be Friday.
Well, I'm thinking that we're gonna train him to do that, and I'm gonna put a little shock collar on him or something like that. And
then
if I don't like the direction of Sue's News, we may shock him. By the way, I don't know if I told you this. Maybe I did on Monday, but I have to take Friday off. And you're off, I know, on Friday, but I did have to take Friday off. So I think it's Ryan Recker who's gonna be here on Friday. Hey, John Lott is back with us this afternoon, and he's been a guest many, many times before on the topic of crime because he's great at crime and really breaking down the numbers in particular. But this is a topic about migrant crime numbers in particular because we know that ICE came out with this a couple of weeks ago, and it was kind of shocking, the numbers that we heard of criminals that have been released into this country. Then the administration comes back and tries to, you know, clarify everything, of course. John is the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, joins us on 97 FM Talk. Mr. John Lott, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, what did you find? You're great at doing this research. So, you know, ICE comes out. They said, and Tony Gonzalez from Texas exposes this, 435,000-plus convicted criminals, 225,000 people with pending criminal charges. That gets out there. People are outraged. But then the White House wants to spin it. So what have you found to be the truth here, John?
Well, there are a couple things to point out. One is you have to look at what the percent is of these non-detained individuals. And it turns out that about 9% of the 7.4 million non-detained individuals have criminal records. In fact, the murder rate by these non-detained individuals. So first of all, maybe I should back up a second. So you have people coming into the country. The government processes them. And the vast majority of them, they've led into the country. Now, you have two groups of people that are processed, those that voluntarily turn themselves in, and that's about 80% of the total, and those that are caught. Now, it's pretty clear that the ones who voluntarily turn themselves in, you're probably not very concerned about. I mean, if they were murderers or rapists in their home countries, they'd be concerned that they could get caught.
Right.
And be stopped. And so, but the thing is, what that doesn't include are the so-called gotaways, which are in the millions. These are people that we see coming across the border and we don't catch. And then what could be many millions more, which ones we never even see come across the border. During the Biden administration, you've had over 90% of the border agents who were normally patrolling the border pulled off of that to go and handle processing for the people that were coming in. And also, the passive monitoring system in large parts of the border has been broken and down. So we have no clue how many of those. And those are the ones who are trying to avoid turning themselves in, who are the ones who probably have an even higher rate. So that 9% is probably a real underestimate of the problem that you have with the, you know, the total illegal immigrants that are coming into the country. But, you know, there's another thing to point out, too, and that is one of the spins that they've had on this, say, well, this occurs across multiple administrations.
Right, right.
And that's true. But what you have to do is you have to look at how people were checked across different administrations. So, for example, during the Trump administration, we had Remain in Mexico. And what happened was the Customs and Immigration Service did the background checks on people. And that's different than the background checks that were done under the Biden administration, which were done by ICE. The Customs and Immigration Services, part of their role was to go and check the home countries of the people that were coming in to check their criminal records. Under the Biden administration, there was no checking of the home country records for these individuals. So, you know, it's not too surprising that you're going to find out that they have criminal records after you've let them into the country, after you've decided not to detain them there. In fact, it may even be that we haven't even discovered all of the ones that were there. And even that 9% may be an underestimate for that reason, too. But, you know, they never would have made it, you know, from the Remain in Mexico. They never would have been allowed in under the Trump administration. If they had criminal records in their home countries and a check with those home countries had revealed that information. It's very different systems. And, you know, not only do we have so many more illegals coming in, and not only are they checked differently, but, you know, the problem is basically occurring during the Biden administration, even though it's true you have some people getting through during earlier administrations.
John Lott is back with us. He's the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. So a couple things here. One thing that you reported is this took 6 months for ICE to even come out with these numbers that Congress was requesting. And then you also mentioned, I don't know if I know much about this, this seems like an undercovered aspect of this, that there was a guy from San Diego, a Border Chief Patrol Agent, Aaron Heitke, who testified. You said in your report, you said the administration ordered him not to publicize the arrests of illegal border crossers identified as having ties to terrorism. Talk about a red flag.
Right, yeah. So, right. Well, I mean, it raises questions about any of the data that the Biden administration is putting out on this stuff. If they're specifically ordering border agents to essentially hide data on bad people coming into the country, then even the numbers that they're given, this 9% of these non-detained individuals being, you know, having criminal records, or the fact that the murder rate for these non-detained individuals is at least 50% higher than the murder rate for Americans normally. You know, you don't know what to trust anymore. You just know that these are probably very conservative estimates of the problem. Even with the fact that we're talking overwhelmingly people who voluntarily turned themselves in, and just a small portion, 20%, being ones that were caught that, you know, hadn't voluntarily turned themselves in. Because that's probably where most of the problem is for that 9% comes from that 20% there.
One of the things that you mentioned in your reporting on this is that, you know, the president and the vice president, they have the authority to call for expedited extradition for criminals, right? But they're not doing that. And they're actually, yeah. Are you saying they're actually going in the other direction, making it more difficult to extradite?
Yeah, they're making it more difficult.
How does that solve anything, right?
I don't know, but she's claiming that she's going to be tough on the border when she gets selected president. I mean, obviously, she could take care of these types of things right now. She could use expedited extradition right now on criminals. They could be going and searching for them. They could go and have ICE, you know, actually being involved in catching these people and deporting them. But, you know, they have other priorities that they want to go and deal with.
Yeah, she has to go on The View and Stephen Colbert. That's the priority right now. While I have here, John, you know, one of the things that gets discussed a lot in this presidential race is crime. And the other side tries to spin these crime numbers. Look, I'm in a city right now that has a lot of crime issues, and we've got issues with reporting. You and I have talked about that before. Even the federal database has been off. So when it comes to the claim that they keep making here that, you know, violent crime is actually down, most of these areas are really down the last couple of years. How do you still respond to that?
Well, it's interesting. So there are two main measures of crime that we have. We have the FBI data on crimes reported to police, and then we have the National Crime Victimization data, which tries to get a measure of total crime. And the thing is, people have been focusing on just crimes reported to police. Well, we know the vast majority of crimes, about 60% of violent crimes, aren't reported to police. We know about 70% of property crimes aren't reported to police. The amazing thing, and it didn't get any news coverage, is that even the FBI reported crime data has been revised. So in 2022, originally the FBI claimed that there had been a 2.1% drop in reported violent crimes to the police. And just last month, they revised those 2022 numbers. And rather than a 2.1% drop, which is what the media has been reporting for the last year when they've had these headlines that say, you know, violent crime is down, but people mistakenly think it's increased, that they've now changed it from a 2.1% drop to a 4.5% increase. But what people have to understand is that even that 4.5% is an underestimate of it. And there are lots of problems with it. I'll give you one example. In many parts of the country, if you call up police, 911, and report a crime, they'll ask you, is the criminal there right now? Is it an emergency? And if you tell them that the criminal's already left the crime scene, they'll say, okay, well, you can come down to the police station, wait in line, and we'll have a police report filled out. Well, what happens is that, you know, a few years ago, they would have sent out a police car. They're making it more time-consuming, more costly for you to go and report crimes now than it was a few years ago. And there's going to be a few people, at least a few people, some who previously would have reported crimes, who are saying now it's not worth it. And so if you look at the measure of total crime during the Biden administration, it increased by 55%. We've never had such a huge increase over any 3-year period in the entire 51 years that they've been recording that data. Nothing even close. In fact, the next largest increase over 3 years occurred in 2006, and that was a 27% increase. So this is slightly more than twice as large as the largest previous increase that had ever been recorded in terms of changes in total violent crime.
And I think,
you know, people see this.
Yeah, they do. They feel it. They're absolutely they do. And that's why, you know, you said earlier, it's hard to trust the experts. The experts are wrong so often, and they try to spin these things. John, awesome as usual. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Have a great week.
Thank you very much.
Let me give you a little example of how the media covers one story versus the way that the alternative media may cover the same story. So here, you know, I just was Googling this because I'm going to play you a sound clip that's really, really funny with Trump and these guys from this podcast that's called Flagrant. And a couple of guys that I'm probably too old to know who they are. Their names are Andrew. Let's see here. I know that we pulled this. Now I can't find it because the thing is different. I'll find it here in a second. But two comedians, Sue. And they're asking Trump questions. And the way that the New Republic covered this is hilarious. This is what happened when I was looking. Hey, Ethan, show me where those are, because my brain is not working properly. And just show me where those clips are so I know what I'm doing here. That's on my fault. I apologize. So I was Googling their names because I was unfamiliar with them. Andrew Schultz and Oshkosh. What's his last name? Oshkosh. Singh. Or Singe. Like, you know, Singh.
Gotcha.
BJ Singh would be like, I did work with a host in Wisconsin that called him VJ Singe on a commercial. Dear. So then I always started calling him VJ Singe, professional golfer for people who don't know. So these guys are stand-up guys. I don't know them, right? But
when I Googled it, just because, Sue, I was trying to figure out who they were.
Well, sure.
One of the first things that comes up is a piece that's in the New Republic, which is a liberal, you know, rag out there. And it says, podcast hosts laugh in Trump's face as he struggles to defend rambling. These guys were laughing because Trump was funny. That's why they were laughing.
Oh, that's funny.
And at the end of the article, they say Trump's disastrous appearance comes as his team launches criticism at Kamala Harris. You tell me if this is a disastrous appearance, because I think it needs to be played more often.
Jack. You're TikTok, oh, yeah,
TikTok
guy.
Jack.
TikTok Jack.
You know, this is a little new world. I call him, his name is Jack. I call him TikTok Jack. I'm good with names, you know.
You are. You're very good.
There you go.
Pocahontas.
Yeah.
We have names.
What about, and there was, you, Tampon Tim was good. What about,
Tim,
is that?
The problem with Tampon Tim, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
In other words.
It's a mouthful.
It's a lot. Yeah. Tampon. And you can't stutter it through when you fall. It's really a lousy word to say.
Yeah.
But it's quite accurate.
Does that sound like a disastrous appearance?
No.
Seems like they're having a pretty good time with one another.
There are some, like Comrade Kamala. It's a little hard to say. She's Comrade because she's obviously a communist.
Yeah.
She's horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
So I call her Comrade.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not bad. But when you put the names together, it's a little, you got to be able to pum. you got to be able to put it out there. But we have a lot of good ones. A lot of them I can't go into with you because some of my best ones are from the Republican primaries.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all friends of mine now.
Yeah, so like Little Marco and stuff like that. I thought that was great. And he has this ability. This is something I think that does bleed through to the electorate. And this is maybe where this is going to get decided. Because think about a moment like that. It comes off as Trumpian Trump, right? This is what he does. He's genuine. Actually, those are moments that he really kind of shines because he has a sense of humor. Now we've seen Kamala Harris do Stephen Colbert, The View. You missed that yesterday,
oh,
Sue.
Boy.
She's doing a couple of podcasts as well, and she's cackling and laughing. And it's not... Some of it's not awful. I mean, you're trying to present more of a human side. She's talking about, you know, cooking and family holidays and stuff like that. But there's no real genuine moments with Kamala Harris that I hear.
No.
And with Trump, it's just kind of natural. You feel like she's doing everything she's doing. And I get it. This is what politicians do, is to try to redefine herself in the eyes of the country because the election is 4 weeks off. And you saw this today, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, FEMA held this big briefing. And, I'm guessing FEMA did something like this, a live briefing for Helene. But what I know is that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris weren't part of that briefing. And today they interjected themselves and they were asking questions. Some of the questions, this thing was long and I was actually at home. We didn't pull the audio, but it was almost like, well, my daughter's in fourth grade, so I don't even think it was a fourth grader. It was almost like a second grader asking some of the questions just because they wanted to answer or they wanted to ask a question. So it seemed like they were on top of the situation.
See.
At one point, the president says something like, well, you know, let me ask you this. We're talking about the storm surge and the flooding. But isn't it true that the winds are also part of this as well?
What?
You think it's a hurricane?
That's bizarre.
Well, I wish I was making that up. But he, you know, a couple of times he had to say anyway. Just like Dana Carvey would.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we return for the second hour this afternoon, Dave Murray's going to join us with his take on Milton. And then I also have a story about did you hear about the Mega Millions increase?
No.
Okay. We're going to see how this passes the smells test in a second. I'm old enough to remember when a Mega Millions ticket was $1. Remember that?
Oh, you're saying the price of them is going up.
The price of them is significantly.
Well, that's
And I'll have details on that. And then Ryan Goebel's going to be with us. He is the captain of the Sea Trek 1, which is a charter boat near Fort Myers. He has moved his vessel upriver. He has Starlink. He was on this boat when Ian and Helene hit. He's going to kind of ride it out again. So we'll talk with him in the 4 o'clock hour here coming up. Kilmeade at 5:07. Still plenty to go this afternoon.
Get more at 971talk.com. 97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome back. 4 o'clock hour. A lot to get to, including a visit with Ryan Goebel, who's the captain of a charter boat by the name of Sea Trek 1, and he is near Fort Myers, and he's moved his vessel upriver, we're told. He has Starlink, and we're going to talk with him about why he's trying to ride this thing out down there. And right now, we have meteorologist Dave Murray with us to kind of explain what's currently happening with Milton. Dave, how are you this afternoon?
Doing fine. How are you guys?
Good. You've covered a lot of these over your career. So how does this even compare? The size of this thing, just when you look at the radar, is just amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. This is a big storm. I'm not going to put it until it gets through and we see what happens with this thing. I'm not going to call it the worst ever because we've got Camille and we've got Katrina and we have some storms of the 50s and the 60s. We have Andrew that hit Florida. I mean, those were all vicious, vicious storms. I do think that probably the monetary numbers are going to be extreme only because of the population centers there and the growth that that part of Florida has had over the last 10, 15 years. It's also a part of Florida that doesn't get hit very often. Now, clearly, Fort Myers and Naples have been hit recently, but Tampa, St. Pete area, down towards Bradenton, doesn't get hit that often by a direct hit just because it's a weird phenomena that makes that happen.
So what's up with all the tornadoes that are occurring?
Not a surprise because of the power of this particular storm, but I've always explained a hurricane as a mass of thunderstorms that rotate around each other. So when the thing starts to interact with land, you have tremendous lift and tremendous downdrafts in these thunderstorms, and that creates severe thunderstorms that produce tornadoes. They're usually small spin-up tornadoes, not the big long-track stuff that we're used to in the Midwest, but they just kind of hit and do their thing, and then they lift back up. But there was, at one point, I think, 70 tornado warnings in effect for Florida, and it's just not near the storm. It's across much of Florida.
And, Dave, did it end up landing as a 3? Has it landed? I'm sorry, I'm not looking at the radar.
Yeah, it has not landed yet. The center of the storm, the eye is expanding a little bit, which you would expect. It's wobbling a little bit, also what you would expect. Landfall is probably about 4 or 5 hours away. It's about 90 miles to the southwest of Tampa right now. And it will tend to slow down. It has been moving very quickly today, but because now about, oh, I would say 35% to 40% of it is over land as far as the whole circulation is concerned. Hurricanes don't like that. They know that it's going to kill them, and so they tend to slow up and try to keep that support going as it gets closer and closer. And the other thing is this will be a hurricane, and when it makes landfall, it's probably a strong 3, maybe a low 4, and the focus is still Tampa, St. Pete, down through about Point Charlotte, Port Charlotte. And, you know, it's an area that a lot of St. Louisans are very aware of. It's a hotbed for St. Louis folks to go vacation in. But this will still be a hurricane, probably a Category 1 as it passes close to Orlando and as it passes close to Daytona Beach. So this is a wide-range hurricane.
What's the difference, Dave? What's the difference, Dave, between this hurricane and Helene? And could this go up into any parts of North Carolina or Georgia?
No, this is not going to be a player for the Carolinas. It's only a player for Florida. Once it hits like the Daytona Beach area, it will go out over the Atlantic Ocean. It's not real favorable to stay strong at that point. There's a lot of wind shear on that side of Florida, so it should tend to fall apart. But this is not going to be a player for the southeast, other than the coastal areas of the southeast that will see some storm surges on the backside of it as it makes pops back out over the ocean. So this is not a concern for North Carolina or Tennessee or any place in the Ohio Valley, which that was an unusual situation. The difference in this storm is a little more compact than Helene was. Helene was a monster. It was like 600 miles wide at one point. This is big. There's no question about it, but they're two very different animals.
Dave, appreciate the update. So, you know, you're on the West Coast, but there's like even part of me that wants to stay up tonight and, you know, watch this thing. I'm guessing if you're in Florida, you're going to be watching some of the coverage. It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, but, you know, the other thing about it is, like, even if it does land as a 3 and the wind speeds are down, that doesn't necessarily minimize the impact because of all the flooding, correct?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. The storm surge is going to be tremendous. also with, you know, it let's say it has 115, 120 mile per hour wind gust in this thing. It also has a forward motion, probably as the eye makes landfall, of 15 to 20 miles per hour. That's an added push to that thing. And that's why the worst part of this storm is to the east and to the northeast of the center of the eye.
All right. Well, listen, keep us posted. Thank you so much for the update this afternoon.
You got it.
And we are going to speak with Ryan Goble, who is the captain of a charter boat, a fishing boat down there. We're going to hook up with him. He's kind of waiting this thing out near Fort Myers. By the way, on a weather note, I just have to mention this because I was thinking about all of us yesterday. I think we've noticed this when you leave here, and if you're a friend of mine told me this story. My buddy Fitz was coming back from Pittsburgh, went and saw the Steelers game. And as he's coming across the poplar the other night, the sun angle is so severe.
It's brutal.
You couldn't even see. Like, I've experienced that a couple of times going home. And you guys will appreciate this, and maybe the audience too, but I know that you too will. I'm literally in my car yelling at the sun to F off. Like the sun's going to listen to me and do something different and not, you know, blast my eyes as much. That's how dumb I am. I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah,
You can see me doing that, though, can't you, Fred?
Oh, yeah, I can. That's sort of MTG-like.
You know what? It kind of is. It's got to be somebody's fault that the sun is doing that, right? That's what I'm going to say. Let's do this.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
On this day in history, 63 years ago, that's 1961, Fred.
Okay.
This song by Ray Charles peaked at number one on the singles chart. Oh. Oh, yeah.
Had a little bit of a slow start.
Yeah, I should have told him earlier.
Here it is.
That's my bad.
It sounds like a song from the early 60s,
doesn't it?
Yeah, I know. There's been a few updated versions, right?
Exactly. And that's why I put, just to contrast, this was the number two song at the same year on this day in history.
I was all right for a while.
It's all right for a while.
The music hasn't changed very much over the years.
No, it really has. Isn't that crazy?
I do love Roy Orbison, though.
You gotta love Roy.
I got a little, we got a little Traveling Wilburys, I think, even this afternoon for the bumper music. If we don't have it today, Ethan, do you remember? I was thinking of Hurricane. Did I put Traveling Wilburys
I believe
today?
You did, yes.
All right, we got a little Roy on that, then.
And on this day in history, 51 years ago, that's in 1973, that's when Elvis and Priscilla got divorced. They got divorced in Santa Monica, California. They were only really married for 6 years. And she was awarded nearly, now this is 1973, $1.5 million in cash and $4,200 a month alimony for 1 year, half the sale price of the couple's $750,000 home, and 5% interest in two of Elvis's publishing companies, which probably wasn't bad for back then. And I'm thinking, obviously, it was the house they sold was in California. So Graceland is
I did not watch the Oprah thing last night. I do want to watch it. I just didn't have time last night. Busy with my daughter and was watching a little baseball. But it did seem, we talked about yesterday on the air during this segment, Sue, and it seemed rather intriguing.
Yeah. Okay, it was just reported that Carrie Underwood is paid $1 million every time this is played from NBC's Sunday Night Football. $1 million every time.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
Because when you started that, I thought, you know what? I can see her getting $1 million for the whole season for doing this song.
So you're saying it's like $18 million?
That is correct, Fred.
Wow.
God, that is
so
really
fired up,
amazing.
It's worth it.
But
so
while
good.
Ethan was pulling it, he's like, this really gets me fired up. See, that is why she gets $1 million every time.
I said, Sue, I have goosebumps right now.
I do too.
How much does Stapleton get, you think?
Well,
nowhere near that much.
Million.
No way.
Well, you know, I always kind of have gut checks on this, and when things don't seem right to me, you know, I throw the challenge flag. Here's why this may seem right to me. You think about the amount of revenue that these football games are producing. Carrie's agent's saying, hey, well, I'm going to get a little chunk of that every time you play because it's a big part of the show. So I'm not so sure that that's inaccurate. Well, that's fascinating.
Even beyond that, that was just last year's. So she may make more in 2024. That was 2023 numbers. And she took over from, do you remember who did it up to 2013, my football peeps? Who was it?
Oh, it was the bearded. He was very, I can't think of his name. Great country singer.
I thought I heard it.
Faith Hill.
It was Faith Hill, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it was Faith Hill.
Yeah. Faith Hill. She took over for Faith Hill in 2013. All right, that means...
What's funny, though, is that became such a staple, and we struggled there to remember that Faith Hill did it.
Yeah,
it really.
Yes.
It was a big deal when she took over, though, when Carrie Underwood
took over.
Yeah,
it was a big deal, right.
So are you thinking of Chris Stapleton? He does the Monday Night Football.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
That's what
but
I'm thinking.
You have to remember, Fred, Monday and Sunday Night Football became kind of convoluted there for a while.
So it used to be
Monday Night Football was the deal. Well, then they made it Sunday Night Football, but then they still do Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
So you have, and I liked, you know, Stapleton does the Phil Collins in the,
air
tonight.
In the air tonight.
It's really good.
Okay, she just records these all at once, too. She goes in for each year all at once. She says, I do a whole main version, but then we go through and pick all the matchups for regular season and playoff football, and then I sing every possible combination of teams that could possibly play each other.
Yeah, because...
And put it in the can.
At the end of the year, they do these flex games, so they may not even have that game on the schedule yet, so they have to be prepared for that.
That's right. She's like, even in the back of your mind, you're like... There is no way these people are going to make it to the playoffs. I'm singing them versus everybody to try to get it in there.
You never know.
Uh-huh. $18 million for one day's work. Not so bad. You go Carrie Underwood.
it's no wonder that she can afford the personal trainers to get her body in that shape, right?
Man, if I had it, I would do the same thing. A big change, Fred found this story, is coming to Wimbledon in 2025.
The money or the body?
Well, either would be a surprise, Fred. Either would be a surprise. A big change coming to Wimbledon in 2025. The All England Club announced this week that it would replace human line judges with AI at next year's tournament. The AI system will handle out and fault calls and is built on ball tracking and line calling technology that's already in use. The club's chief executive, Sally Bolton, said the goal is maximum accuracy in our officiating.
Well, and it makes sense, but didn't we have in the U.S. Open, there was a situation
there was
where
one wrong call.
It didn't work,
right? I remember that, too. And I wonder if they've been watching all that. And just finally figured we'll give it a shot. Maybe there are human backups. I'm sure we review the tape or the non-tape.
Doesn't AI learn from itself? So there you go.
Ugh, you're right. It does. And finally, at Sue's News, we have today's random fact. Okay. Pez dispensers originally looked like lighters and were marketed at adults as an alternative to smoking. What? I had no idea, but you can see it when you pull back the little head, it could be that. Hmm. And that's it for Susan.
Well, so much of that is just muscle memory, right? So I get what they're going for.
It all comes a little candy. Sugar.
Reminds me of the Seinfeld scene where he puts it on Elaine's lap during the piano recital and she can't stop laughing.
We have Ryan Goebel, who is going to try to wait out this hurricane in Fort Myers. He's going to join us next on 97.1 FM Talk. All right, we still have a lot to get to here this afternoon. We're going to get back into the CBS News story, dressing down Tony DiCoppo on the morning show, which was fascinating. I got into that and played some of the audio yesterday, but Nicholas Fondacero, who's with Media Research Center, is going to join us. We got Kilmeade in the next hour. Also, George Rosenthal, our friend from ThrottleNet. We're going to talk a little bit about Starlink and how that works. In fact, we have maybe a real-life example of that here this afternoon, although we're trying to still arrange it. Ryan Goebel is the captain of Sea Trek 1, which is a charter fishing boat. It's down near Fort Myers. The owner of that ship is Deborah Donzi, who's with us this afternoon. We were trying to get Ryan on the line. Deborah, are you there?
I am, and actually my husband is on the phone, too. I conference called him, and he's in Ohio. So, Chuck, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, we're all over the country. That's pretty good. I like technology. The problem is we don't have Ryan on right now, right?
I know. And Chuck's been in constant contact with him, and I talked to him, and he said he would answer unless and Chuck can tell you better what's going on there.
All right, Chuck, give us the update here. And is this smart to kind of stay down there and try to ride this out? I think would be one question.
Yeah, you know, they are they're probably 8 to 10 miles inland up a river. So they're protected from the storm surge because they went past the first set of locks. So that is our hurricane plan for the boat, if you will. so that it's protected, you know, from the storm surge. Now they'll still get wind and rain, but it won't be anything, you know, as if you're right on the beach or right on the coast where you get that heavy, you know, anywhere from, you know, 6 foot plus storm surge. I mean, with Ian, we had almost 15 feet of storm surge at our dock, and it was, devastating.
Yeah, and I think we spoke with you guys a couple of years ago. That, I mean, that was 2 years ago, essentially last week, right? Right around the end of September that came through.
Yep. September 28th.
And that boat got, if I remember that conversation, that thing got tossed around quite a bit down there, didn't it?
Yeah, it broke free, and we couldn't get up the river because the drawbridge for the railroad was down, and they wouldn't open it for us. But anyway, it broke free from the dock and went across the four-lane highway and was over in the mangroves.
What happened with Helene? And was there an impact with Helene? Obviously, a little bit different area, a different, you know, trek that this hurricane is taking, but did you have challenges there as well?
Helene, we had some flooding at our dock. We didn't move the boat, but everything was fine there. We had some flooding. We probably had 4 foot of water over the seawall. And at our location there, we had some flooding and some cleanup. Nothing, no real major damage, just more cleanup than anything.
And Mark, no real damage because the house was already wiped out.
Well, yeah, that's true. There's no building.
Well, there is that.
Building there to damage anymore. So,
well, yeah, there is that. Now, how long have you guys been doing this down there in Florida? And I guess maybe my question would be, how much is this impacting your business now? Because it seems like the hurricanes, at least the past couple of years, have really increased.
Yeah. So it's a crazy story. So our son has been down there for 7-8 years, working for the SeaTrack charter boat, and it came up an opportunity that the previous owner was wanting to sell it, and so we kind of discussed it and talked about it, and we ended up buying it, and we actually signed the papers and bought it 3 weeks to the day before Hurricane Ian hit.
I remember that.
So then we went almost 9 months to get back in business, so obviously, you know, spending a lot of money on repairs, no revenue coming in. And yeah, so we've been doing it for a couple of years, a little over 2 years. But I, you know, I talked to locals down there, to Captain Kenny, who we bought the business from. He's been there his whole life. And I just asked him last week, I said, Kenny, have you ever seen anything like this where it's just these major hurricane after major hurricane? He said, no, I've never. As a matter of fact, we've taken the boat up the river now 3 times. And in 40 plus years, Kenny said he did it once.
Well, that says something right there. Hey, by the way, this is just a random question, but I was thinking about this. No one ever discusses this. What the hell happens to all these fish during a hurricane? And how long does that take to settle down before you can go back out there and fish again? You would think that there'd be severe damage to their, you know, infrastructure, but maybe not. You guys know?
Well, actually, from what I heard, and we weren't able to get out right after the hurricane the last time, but actually, from what I heard, the fishing was really good.
Fascinating. Well, maybe they get real hungry after that. They got to hunker down, and then they get hungry, right?
Well, that, and there's for quite a while, there's a lot less fishing pressure, people out fishing, because, you know, they've lost their boats and they can't get out there.
Well, that makes a difference, too. Absolutely. Well, at this point, so you're just kind of, you know, hoping that Ryan's okay, and you're going to, the Starlink, we're going to get a little explanation of that in the next hour. I don't know much about Starlink, but that's something that's helped you with communication here in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, we have Starlink on our boat, and what that does is when we're out, you know, we'll be out as far as, you know, 120, 130 miles offshore on some of these fishing trips, and obviously you have no cell phone coverage out there. So with Starlink, we've got Wi-Fi with Starlink, and you can do Wi-Fi calling, so, you know, we're able to stay in contact. And
that's amazing, isn't it?
That is amazing.
It really is.
While they're out there, yeah, it really is. And it's, before, you had to have a satellite phone.
Right.
And now we've got, not only do we have, you know, Wi-Fi calling, but they've got Wi-Fi on the boat. They can, you know, watch movies and do whatever they want.
You tell me they don't have cell towers in the middle of the damn ocean? Come on. AT&T can't step up their game. That's incredible that is providing, you know, so much advantage down there for sure. Well, thank you, too, for giving us the update this afternoon. We hope that Ryan's okay, and keep us posted. Okay, Debbie?
Okay, I sure will.
Chuck, you too. Thank you so much for jumping on here. All right. Appreciate it. Wow. I mean, I don't even know. They're far away from all the action, but still, that would make me a little nervous. This guy's named Reed Timmer. He was on Fox, and he's a storm chaser. I think these guys are crazy. I saw some of the videos of one of the hurricane hunters. They were in the eye of Milton and just shaking around up there. This was a guy that went, you know, chasing down Helene.
I'm right in the eye of Category 4 Hurricane Helene. Winds are going to be gusting over 100 miles an hour shortly here. Big time winds in the eye wall.
All right, so that was a couple of weeks ago. Now in Tampa.
Well, I'm here in the downtown Tampa area, and it is a ghost town here. You can see a lot of boarding up that's happening. People have taken it very seriously in Tampa. There are gas shortages between Tampa and Orlando. You really can't get gas anywhere right now across these areas. And I'm just seeing chickens migrating throughout the streets of downtown Tampa here.
What?
But it looks like it is going to be trending a little bit south, and that exact track definitely is very important because wherever that comes ashore, the dirty side of the system is where the storm surge comes in. Right where that eye wall comes in at a perpendicular angle to the shoreline.
All right, so the chickens are on the loose down there as well. Now, he kind of addressed the differences between these two hurricanes, Helene and Milton.
Well, Helene definitely had that closed upper-level low just upstream of it, so you had that Fujiwara interaction. Basically, it sucked Helene like a magnet due north, and that basically like a slingshot mechanism took it right up into the southern Appalachians, becoming a mega disaster up there in terms of flooding, a hydrological nightmare across that complex terrain of the southern Appalachians. This one has a much flatter trough upstream. It's barely a subtle little upper level system, and that's why it's taken more of an easterly track right over the Florida Peninsula and then eventually out to sea. So at least the good news is that it's not going to be pulled northward into the southern Appalachians where Helene hammered so hard.
So we had Dave Murray on earlier this hour. He has said, if I'm not mistaken, he's flown into the eyes of hurricanes, right? He's been on some of these planes.
Yes, he said it was awful.
This guy says he's going to do it for this one.
Yeah, my objective is to get in the eye. We have some new sensors that we're going to deploy, and my goal is to get a vertical sounding inside of the eye with these new high-resolution sensors. So our goal is definitely scientific and also to report as the conditions deteriorate across this area. Those people that evacuated like to see what's happening in their home after they get out. So we'll be covering that, the storm surge, and also deploying data inside of the eye.
Wow, there you go. Reed Timmer chasing down Milton. We're going to keep you posted throughout the next 24 to 48 hours. It could be a bad one tomorrow as this comes ashore in just about 4 hours. Sue is telling me that our friend and colleague Brad Young is reporting in from Highway 40 that it is a disaster this afternoon, right?
Yeah, that accident approaching 141, and they've got, you know, the two left lanes blocked. And that leaves only the right lane. I'm sorry, the two left lanes are the only ones open. The right lanes are blocked. He's been sitting there for 70 minutes.
But he's listening to the show, Sue.
Yeah.
He's doing the right thing, and we appreciate that, Brad. Yesterday, I talked about the situation with CBS News. They held a big meeting on the anniversary of what happened with Hamas in Israel. The same day that Hamas parachutes into Israel, rapes, tortures, murders children, they decide to make this all about an interview that happened last week between Tony DeCoppel, their host for the morning show, one of their hosts with Gail King, and a guy by the name of Ta-Nehisi Coates, who is a liberal whack job who writes a book about Israel. And in this entire book does not mention the word Hamas once, doesn't mention Iran, leaves all. So it's completely one sided, which certainly he has the right to do. But Tony DeCoppel has the right to ask him questions about that. So he does that. It's actually a pretty good interview. You know, and everyone seems to be fine.
Yeah.
But then the snowflakes at CBS decide to complain, all the little producers and editors and people that weren't happy with Tony. So they do a conference call with all their reporters and news staff, and here's what they say.
Many of you have reached out to express concerns over recent reporting, specifically about the CBS Morning's Coates interview from last week, as well as comments made coming out of some of our correspondents' reporting. I want to thank every single one who reached out for your honesty, your transparency, and your commitment. So I want to address three things. Number one, after a review of our coverage, including the interview, it's clear there are times we have not met our editorial standards.
Yeah, like last week with the debate, by the way. This is what's so funny, that they want to point toward this thing with Tony DeCoppel when they have all kinds of evidence, including Bill Whitaker, who came to St. Louis and completely manipulated and lied to the rest of the country about our prosecutor at the time, Kim Gardner. Nick Fondicero is with us. He is with the Media Research Center and Newsbusters. This is an interesting story, isn't it, Nick? How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on, Mark.
You don't often get, and I don't know if anyone's going to try to out the person who leaked it, but it's funny. On that conference call, I'm sure you've listened to it, Sue, at the beginning, they say, we appreciate everyone keeping these conversations confidential. And somebody leaked the whole damn thing, didn't they, Nick?
Yeah, definitely. What's worse about it is that you can see when there is pushback from like Jan Crawford, where they're like, oh, no, he did a good job. And if you guys are getting these calls from people saying he's doing a bad job from inside the office, maybe I should be doing the opposite calls to let you know he's doing a great job. So he's getting some support on the inside. Right. And you had Redstone come out today, one of their upper echelon people who doesn't deal with the day to day stuff at CBS. But it comes out and goes, oh, I thought the interview was really good. And this Redstone has a history of fighting anti-Semitism, so it makes sense that she would back Tony in this.
Yeah, so you're talking about Sherry Redstone, and this is interesting. You know, I think it's another interesting development, which, by the way, makes management at CBS in their news division just look terrible. So she's the chair of Paramount Global. That's the parent company. She said that CBS leadership had made a, quote, bad mistake with their handling of CBS Morning's co-host Tony DeCoppola's contentious interview last week. I give her credit for doing that, and it makes me wonder even more why these suits at CBS decided to do this on this conference call, because it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. What I want to hear more is about how the complaints came in and what specifically they were complaining about.
I think one of the complaints might have been they know when they were talking about like what happened with the interview. They're like, oh, that interview plus the sign off with one of our correspondents, which before they went to that interview, Tony got into it a little bit with a foreign correspondent, India's Tayeb, who is fairly pro-Palestinian. He went around and did some really gushy interviews with Hamas terrorists that were released, and he's sitting there smiling. They're having a good time sitting and talking about getting released. And when Tayeb was doing a report sort of lamenting Hezbollah getting bombed in Lebanon, Tony basically said, like, oh, they got what was coming to them after launching rockets for a year at Israel. And you see, like, an active grimace on Tayeb's face when he hears that. So if I was to put money on somebody, it might have been Tayeb.
Right, right. And maybe more than that. But look, what the reporting has been is that there has been strong and growing discord within CBS News that needed to be addressed in the editorial meeting. But what's hilarious about it, as you know better than anyone, especially at Newsbusters, that they say this all with a straight face, completely not acknowledging the bias that took place 2 weeks ago or just a week ago in the vice presidential debate or any other of litany of things that CBS has been involved in an embarrassing way over the course of the last couple of decades, I'd say.
Yeah, like they're definitely like what we saw in the debate where Tim Walz was able to get away with stuff. Meanwhile, they were trying to actively fact check Vance when they were literally trampling the rules of their debate, when their debate rule said, we're not going to fact check. That's going to be up to the candidates to make their points to each other. And they were trampling all over those rules. And it's like this massive double standard, because even on CBS Mornings, there's this double standard where they said in the meeting, oh, Tony was essentially bringing his personal feelings to it because he has children over his he has a couple children from a previous marriage that live in Israel, so he brought his personal baggage to the table here. But during the George Floyd stuff, you had Gayle King bringing her personal baggage and getting close to breaking down in tears over what happened. So there's this double standard that Tony's not going to be able to bring his stuff and show
Talk
about his lived experience.
But she can. She can bring all the emotion. Mm-hmm. And you know, there was nothing. I watched the interview. There was nothing that was unprofessional. He was very honest in the way that he was handling the question. They even highlighted in the CBS, and apparently they tried to dress him down in an hour-long meeting, but I don't think it went very well. And you mentioned Jan Crawford, Sue. Jan Crawford was the only one, at least on the call that we heard, that, you know, stood up for him. But it's also a situation where, again, CBS, of all places, when it comes to bias in the media, and I don't know if you ever read or if you're familiar with Bernie Goldberg. Bernie's a friend. I've known him for a long time. He was a longtime CBS News reporter. And, you know, this, I'm guessing you're a little younger than I am, Nick, but in 2001, Bernie Goldberg wrote a book called Bias, A CBS insider exposes how the media distorts the news. And he laid it out for everyone. And he's been pretty much one of the experts on media bias for the last couple of decades. And he was way ahead of the game. So this does not surprise me with CBS News, which makes it even more comical that they tried to take the stand in the position that this was all about, you know, journalistic integrity, if you will. No, it's about upper management getting scared because of a bunch of snowflakes complaining about their coverage of Israel. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah, especially when they have, like, again, a lot of that is coming from the younger people that they're getting out of these journalism schools now, coming out of college, where they're not taught to be objective and show sides to a story, that they're taught to be activists in their journalism, right? Like, that's what Coates was all about. It's like, oh, I'm only going to show the Palestinian side here because I think personally the Israel side gets too much attention in the media. Meanwhile, we know that the media leans towards the Palestinian cause anyway.
You know, this reminds me, I always talk about some of these local cases that come up, but we had last year, I had a little dust up with a local reporter, might have even been earlier this year, who's at our local NBC affiliate. One of the things that I thought was interesting is that when we were exchanging messages back and forth, and this was about some of the gender-affirming care stuff, she said something on her Twitter feed along the lines of, you know, I'm a very proud and loyal ally to the LGBTQ plus, you know, community. And my response was, wait a second, how can you have a reporter who declares her allegiance to identity politics covering a story that relates to identity politics? By the way, the answer to that is it shouldn't happen. But this is what journalism has become. They're not embarrassed by it at all. In fact, they're proud of it at local television stations and newspapers. And this is what they do. And this is how they're educated, I guess, or indoctrinated was the word I should have used there.
Yeah, journalists are supposed to be dispassionate observers and presenters of the facts and presenters of the events that are going on around us. And we see this even earlier, I believe it was this year, CBS showed us where they lie on good journalism, right? They fired Catherine Herridge, amazing investigative journalist, massive Rolodex. She checks her stuff, she checks her work, and then they got rid of her because she may lean to the right slightly or covers topics that they find problematic, like the Hunter Biden stuff and whatnot.
Look, I can tell you, I have a, well, used to be a very close friend of mine who's now, because of his choice, a former friend. He's one of the suits at CBS News, and I can certainly share more stories beyond what you heard on that conference call yesterday. Nick, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Have a great week.
Thanks for having me on.
Kilmeade's coming up in the next hour.
Get more at 971talk.com. 97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
We got Kilmeade coming up in a little bit at the bottom of the hour, plus an audio cut of the day. I'm trying to see if Fred left me any notes for tomorrow, because often he does that. And I'm off on Friday. Sue and I are both off on Friday, unfortunately, but back on Monday. So we were talking about Starlink a little bit in the next hour with our friends that have a fishing boat down in Fort Myers. You've heard Starlink mentioned a lot here in the last couple of weeks. And you missed this yesterday, Sue. We had Kenny Wallace on. He was actually in Charlotte. He was out there, not necessarily just flood-related, but, you know, he lived there for many years. He's got a lot of contacts and friends and family members. He knows Greg Biffle very well. Greg Biffle, NASCAR driver. Yeah, and he's out there trying to help people, deliver supplies, rescue folks, and he talked about Starlink.
The biggest thing that I'm so happy that we were able to do is communication is key, and Starlink sent us overnight at the beginning of this thing last Sunday 300 Starlink units. And we had over 50 private aviation helicopters deploying these Starlink units out to all of these communities, first responders. Now we're still delivering them to, unfortunately, search and rescue and cadaver dogs.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now, obviously, a lot of work. But, you know, we wanted to find out a little bit more about Starlink and what it's all about. Obviously, this is Elon providing great technology to the planet. Again, George Rosenthal is one of the owners of our friends at ThrottleNet. He joins us this afternoon. Hey, George, how are you? Welcome back.
Good. Thanks for having me back. Man, what a wild time down south and all throughout. I mean, 6 to 8 states affected. And here we are living in 2024, where technology is at a point where literally you can drop a not even a dish. It's a flat panel out of a helicopter and be able to talk to the space. It's kind of amazing.
We had a real good explanation of, you know, how you would practically use this in the last hour, because we had a couple of folks that own a fishing charter down in Fort Myers, and they said, you know, it's been a game changer because you used to have the satellite phone. Not only can you have, you know, Wi-Fi calling, you're a couple hundred miles from shore, but you can watch a movie or something like that if the fishing's slow, right?
Oh, absolutely. This is complete high speed. You're up to 150 to 170 megabits down and 5 to 20 up. I mean, this is high-speed internet. This is watching Netflix, playing video games, literally with a device that can be attached to your backpack. Plug it into your RV, boat, or wherever, and you have high-speed internet anywhere basically on the earth right now.
Hey, George, don't they have that? Like, I've seen neighborhoods out in Pacific, Missouri, and places like that. That's where they use it, right? Where you can't get, I mean, Mark, you should get Skylink.
Well, I'm going to ask that question. Yeah, so where I live, George, let's see if there's practical, you know, application, because I always make it about myself anyway, so we might as well do this. But in the High Ridge Valley Park area, I'm literally, you know, Valley Park is a valley, so I don't have any cell service. Every once in a while, like when the leaves leave the trees, when they fall off, a little bit better. We call this road right by the horse farms there, Sue, Twisty Turney.
Right.
It's actually Hillsborough Road, I think. But I have terrible service from Charter. This whole stuff from T-Mobile doesn't work for me. So is this something that consumers will be able to use eventually at a cost-effective price point?
Oh, yeah. Not just eventually. You can go on Starlink.com right now and order. If you're going to attach it to your home, the residential, there's no upfront cost for that, but it's $120 a month, unlimited data, and there's no contract. You can stop anytime. And you're going to get 150 to 170 meg down, 5 to 20 up. But the point is, if you turn on your Wi-Fi calling on your cell phone, you can call and talk through your Wi-Fi at the high speed. So you don't even have to worry about the connectivity of your phone. And this is available right now.
Why the hell am I not doing this, George? Why the hell am I not doing this?
Okay, this is where Sue says, I have mentioned this to you before.
You've mentioned specifically Starlink?
Yes, okay. Because we were talking about it out in Pacific and places like that. And people, George, were on lists to get on it, right?
Yes, yeah. And well, I mean, and what's nice then, too, is you can take that same panel receiver off your house, put it on in your suitcase, luggage, or travel, or wherever, go on a hike, go on a boat trip, on a RV trip, and take the same device, plug it into an outlet. Long gone are the days of attaching a satellite dish to your roof and having a technician out to make sure that it's pointed at the right satellite at all times. Those days are dying quickly. Now you're to the point where you literally have a flat panel about the size of a large laptop and can take it anywhere you want. I mean, they're... Right now, they have 6,000, roughly 400 satellites in space. They have approval for 15,000, and they really want to put 42,000 around the world. So that no matter where you're at, you can have full high-speed internet, whether you're in the middle of the African desert or whether you're in the jungle down in Brazil. It doesn't matter.
Okay, I didn't know that part, Mark. I didn't know you could take it with you. Holy Toledo. That's nuts, George. That's, wow. Elon Musk, say what you will, but holy Toledo.
Absolutely. That one's called the Mini. So it's called the Starlink Mini. And you can go on starlink.com and actually see it in use.
Okay. I'm going to ask you guys just to talk amongst yourself for a minute here, because I'm actually on the website and I'm filling out my information. Now, this is a learning experience. I had no idea. So I just put in my address, says order Starlink. Then it says there is a congestion charge in your area. What does that mean? Do you know?
Well, that's going to be how many people are. It's going to be the whole, how many, you know, when the first plasma TV came out, there was a whole big surge to go buy them. That's the same thing that's happening now. So especially with a natural disaster, they're prioritizing a lot of their equipment in the southeast region of the country. So if you may have to wait just a little bit,
well,
but
so here's,
you can purchase it.
Here's what they say. Okay, so here's how it breaks down. The service, as you indicated, $120 per month. The congestion charge, good job, Elon, $100. The hardware is $349. The shipping and handling is $20. The tax is $27.12. So I owe today, if I were to do this, $496.12. Now they also have options in here for, you know, some hardware and things to, you know, I guess install it. But is it, where do you put it in your house? Like, does it matter?
So it has a attachment that can go on your roof or on the side of the house. Again, it doesn't have to point directly at a single satellite, since there are so many satellites covering the United States at any given moment. So you're basically aiming it up, and you're using an app to coordinate it. And the app is simply telling you where to turn to match up to the square that's on this app on your phone. And it'll tell you as soon as you have kind of you're good to go.
I love
which
this.
Is why you're able to disconnect this off your roof, put it on your backpack, and take it with you, because when you go to a campsite,
that's brilliant.
And set it up, you're just using the app to point it into the main. All you're doing is pointing it straight up in the sky, and there's so many satellites, and these are low orbit satellites. Okay, these are most satellites are at 22,000 miles up. Okay, and they're doing roughly 7,000 miles an hour in order to keep up with Earth and not to have the gravitational pull it into disaster. But you're talking about these satellites are only 340 miles in the air. So they have to do 17,000 miles an hour just to keep up with the rotation of the Earth. And they're going around the planet once every 90 minutes. That's how fast these things are going.
Well, this is eye-opening. It really is. Just even on the website, we always make it clear that Throttle, that you're not an internet provider. You are, you know, cybersecurity, IT services. But could this potentially really, God, I'm hoping, paralyze, you know, companies like Charter that suck and your service goes out like 10 times during the summer? Could that really affect them, I hope? Maybe?
Well, possibly? I don't know that the word paralyze is there because, for example, I have AT&T fiber. So I'm getting massive, 5 gig down and 5 gig up. That's not going to happen with satellites in space for a long, long time. So this is still high speed internet, but it's nothing like a fiber line to your home.
But I don't have, I guess I would, with Charter, I would have a fiber line. The problem is that nobody else has a fiber line, which is why I can't get other companies. And there's not, I think that's what's frustrating to a lot of people is that there's not enough competition. Now it's getting, there's other companies that are laying cable, but it's taking a while, George.
It is. And, to give an example here of the competition, so the FCC recently, just because of this disaster, allowed SpaceX, obviously Starlink, to partner with T-Mobile to provide free cellular SMS messaging and emergency alert services to disaster areas for free.
That's incredible. Why
that's important is because you can use your phone. So you don't need a receiver from Starlink. If you have an Android 14 and up or an iPhone 14 and up, you can engage the satellite communication services in the settings of those phones. And for free, if you're on T-Mobile, you can then SMS message, get emergency alerts, and possibly make an emergency phone call if you're in the affected storm areas. So, and that's totally free right now for all T-Mobile customers. So if you have family and friends in disaster areas and they're on T-Mobile, tell them to use their emergency services on their settings and they can immediately start texting you back and forth.
That's awesome.
Now,
that's great.
Really is awesome.
The competition scare about that is if the speeds get high enough, why do I need my cell tower when I can walk into my backyard and be talking in full to satellites in space with the same phone that I bought?
That's fascinating. That's great, though. Look, that's going to spur more competition and innovation, which is what I love to hear. While we have you here, George Rosenthal from Throttle, I have to share a story that I told on the air. Maybe it was last week, and it's probably not going to be something that surprises you. So I almost got snagged in one of these fishing expeditions. In this way. So, just as a little background, because what I had ordered was, playing heavy in my mind. I ordered a cable. By the way, it still hasn't gotten here. A couple weeks ago from AudioQuest. It's a headphone cable. My emotional support bunny Oreo gnawed away at my high-end headphone cables and almost ate my damn headphones, right? But I just need to replace the cable. So I go on AudioQuest website. I order. I pay for the expedited shipping. In my mind, it was supposed to be like 3 days. The AudioQuest person that I finally got a hold of says, well, it was actually 5 to 7 days. And I think we're at the 7th day of business. But anyway, that's not what's important. That I had done a couple Saturdays ago, right? It'd be 2 weeks this Saturday. So in my mind, I got a package coming. So I get a notification via text that says, we have a package waiting for you. It says it's USPS and we need some information. It even has a hyperlink that's not active. And it says, hit yes or no. And when I hit yes, it gave me an active hyperlink. And then I hit that and it asked me for my address and my phone number. So I did that. Then the next page asked me for my credit card because I had 1 cent. Okay. I had 1 cent that I owed. Now, George, if it didn't say 1 cent, if it said like 30 cents or maybe I might have actually filled out the information, but something kicked in at that point. I'm like, this doesn't seem right. And then I look at the specific text message that came into my phone. It was from a ridiculous, site. And I think the whole thing was a scam, I think.
It is a total scam. And there's a couple of things that could have been total coincidence of timing, because I get those all the time, even though I may not have ordered something. The other side of that is if you use the website to do that. They could have either been bring that website for your purchase, and maybe that website, the actual retailer, had been compromised, or you need to be aware and see if there's any malware on your machine that is watching your key you're doing. Again, right. It could have been three scenarios that could have happened, but if you ever get something like that, it's always best to talk to the retailer themselves. And if you've already bought something, you should never have to re-put in your credit card.
Well, yeah, and see, that's why it was weird, because it was USPS. They were saying that they had an additional charge. Look, I'm convinced that it was a complete scam, but it was that's so sophisticated, and it almost got me, because it was because if I hadn't expected a package, I probably would have, you know, right away thought, this is something fishy, literally
right,
fishy.
Right,
but
right.
Since I ordered the package, that's why it kind of got me.
It's kind of genius on their part, because anybody that you just dangle that out there, a package, ooh, I did order something. I mean, that's how they get you. They just think of something that people will go for.
When you talk about malware, though, George, like, I'm an Apple Mac guy, so I don't have as many issues as I used to remember having with PCs, but it's been a while. But what's the recommendation there?
So if you are a PC user, it's always best to have your computer scanned for malware, especially if you're just an end user as a residential person. If you're in a business side, that's a totally different thing, where different tools need to be put on your network to be monitoring these kinds of things to ensure that malware isn't going along, you know, throughout the entire network or on your devices. But along with that, even if you're not in a business, you remember we talked last time, Google Chrome had to update because they had several massive security problems. So if you're just out there and you're not part of a company, make sure you're updating your browsers at all the time. So because those security patches are coming out on a regular basis. And that's what's going to stop some of these malware infections. But then again, it always comes down to your decision making as to what information you give and when you give it on what device.
Yeah.
So best to just contact the retailer directly. If you have a question about any type of shipment, or if you're going to put your credit card into anything, make sure it's on a reputable site that has HTTPS, which stands for secure, in the address bar. Those are some things you definitely want to make sure that you're aware of. But yeah, those scams are getting more sophisticated. It's a shame these people wouldn't just put their con smarts to good things, you know?
Well, you know, I think we've said that before, but it is kind of amazing, you know, and I guess all it takes is, you know, just a couple of, like, that's why they call it a fishing expedition. You got 100 people. If one or two, they snag in,
sure.
Well, that's a big win. So I was just looking at this. So the address, it's so weird, George. This came in. It says the USPS package has arrived at the warehouse and cannot be delivered. Please confirm your address within this link. And if you look at the person who texted it, it's this weird convoluted address that says Marine Kolos, probably Russian, _ 4482 at zongkechen.com. So she's in Russia with Putin trying to snag some information from Americans is what it sounded like there.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you're talking about hundreds of billion-dollar industry. So you're right. If you do this to a million people and half of 1% go for it and give you a credit card, not only are you paying them some money, but now they've got your card to go run and do whatever they need to before you figure it out and cancel the card.
Yeah, fascinating. Well, we always learn so much when we have you on the show. All's well in your world, I'm assuming, I'm hoping?
Absolutely. Our job is protecting businesses, and right now it's busier than ever, to be honest with you, because bad guys are, like we just talked about, getting very, very sophisticated, and it is a constant battle. I hate to say it's a cyber war, because people kind of roll their eyes like, oh, yeah, but I'm telling you, it's a constant war of keeping bad actors from infiltrating businesses and ruining businesses completely.
Absolutely. And if you're a business owner right now, I think he knows a guy or a team that can help. ThrottleNet.com. George Rosenthal, thank you so much. Good luck with everything. We'll talk soon.
Thanks so much. Right. Have a great week.
It is a Wednesday afternoon, and we're going to visit with Brian Kilmeade coming up. Audio cut of the day before the end of the hour. Right now, Brian Kilmeade back with us on a Wednesday afternoon. Brian, how are you?
What's happening, Mark?
When you got off the radio show, I don't know if you were paying attention. I don't know if you were on set or anything, but they did this FEMA meeting today that, you know, Fox was airing. And I was paying attention, doing some work. And every once in a while, the president, the vice president would weigh in. They'd ask a question because they had to make it seem like they were on top of this. And of course, I thought to myself, Brian, well, this is very normal. They did the same thing a couple of weeks ago with Helene, right? Except they didn't. So it's just all politics for this White House right now.
It's all a show. And the thing is, so much
they're going out of their way to make it political. They're saying Donald Trump is giving misinformation and Marjorie Taylor Greene is saying that I'm controlling the weather. Excuse me. What type of president sits there and handles things that are political when you're in a crisis? Do you ever see George Bush go, you know, Al Gore keeps saying during the election, or John Kerry keeps chirping? No, you would just do it. And by the way, they were nonstop critical of the war, which was more serious, I would argue, than a hurricane in many circumstances. So I'm just stunned. Number one, the one issue. They keep saying we're giving $750. Why do they make this stuff up? Hey, you idiot. Your vice president said we're getting you $750. Number two is you weren't on it. You were at the beach. You asked those people in Western North Carolina if you're on top of things. And since when does FEMA say, you can't, even though you don't see us, we're there? You're lying. You're not there. You couldn't get there. You do not have helicopters in Western North Carolina. Your Democratic senator didn't ask anybody from his Army base to help out. You should have told him to request it. Your Secretary of Defense would have gotten Fort Liberty, which is Fort Bragg. They were 1 hour away. They had 1,000 people ready to go. Not this Monday, the Monday before. That's 3 days later. They would have been able that day if they called ahead of time. But 3 days later, 1,000 ready to go. All they needed was orders. I talked to him Thursday. He goes, Brian, I still haven't heard anything. Thursday night, he texted me, and he said, we're moving. And then he said, I talked to him on Sunday. He said, we've turned this thing around. We're on top of it. But it didn't have to be this way.
Exactly.
Give me his name, because he goes, I would get fired. So that's a problem. You want to blame Donald Trump and the 750, and you should have done a better job, and I handled Starlink. You didn't handle Starlink. What is your problem? There are bodies still yet to be discovered in the mountains of North Carolina.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm concerned that North Carolina is not going to get enough attention because, you know, now this is all going through Florida. And by the way, I'm sure you saw this yesterday, but I thought DeSantis was just brilliant. Kamala Harris comes in, and she did this on Colbert last night, too. She tries to say that DeSantis is trying to politicize this. And DeSantis snaps back, look, you know how many hurricanes we've had in the, you know, the past 4 years when she's been vice president and the number of times that she's called to help? Zero.
Right. She's not in the chain of command. I'm not going to play games. The vice president's on the line for you. For what? And then I think that Biden tweaked her by saying Ron DeSantis has done a great job. Governor DeSantis has done a great job.
I know, right?
Yeah. Impressed.
Yeah, that was interesting for sure. Let's move on to a couple other topics I want to get your opinion on. I've spent a lot of time here in the last couple of days on this Tony DeCoppel story at CBS and this leaked, you know, conference call from yesterday morning, I guess Monday morning at this time. That's pretty fascinating the way that that's playing out, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, we played a lot of it today with Martha McCallum, and he did nothing wrong.
No.
He read the book. Now, his co-anchors might be angry. Because I know what it's like to be on a show with other anchors. When you take 6-7 questions in a row, they get kind of ticked. But that's not his. That's not the author's problem. It's not CBS's problem. That's some between the anchors. But as far as I know, don't even factor into this. But what did you think?
I thought it was a good interview. It was actually, if I would have, you know, watched that interview and not known anything about the controversy, I would have actually been impressed with Tony DeCoppel actually, you know, asking a few tough questions. This is a guy, Ta-Nehisi Coates, that wrote a book about Israel and didn't include anything, didn't even mention the word Hamas, Brian, or Iran, or nothing like that.
Direction will resume automatically when you return to the route. Do you need updated?
Well, we hope Kilmeade's okay because now he's getting the GPS directions here.
Cancel route.
Yeah.
Are you okay? You're not lost, are you?
No.
Okay. There we go. But my take was that CBS embarrassed themselves, especially since they also forgot that the two anchors that were extremely biased a week ago during the vice presidential debate also work for CBS News, don't they? Nora O'Donnell and Margaret Brennan.
Nope. Canceled.
Yes. Is everything okay?
Yes.
Poor Brian, we should probably let you go. You're busy. I get it.
No. Sorry. I'll let you finish. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I was on the CBS thing. I thought it's embarrassing that now I don't know how many people actually would hear the audio of what was leaked yesterday or dialed into this story, but it's so hypocritical for them to get involved in this particular story and say, we have these standards at CBS News, knowing their history. You know, on the other hand, I will say this. Bill Whitaker surprised me with his questioning of Kamala Harris. It was rather intense. I give him credit for that.
But the lawyer is not buying into it. And I love the fact that they're divided about the whole thing. They say, you know, this is a joke. I think this shows you when it's so obvious that the anchor was right. And it's so clearly that CBS thinks the anchor was wrong and thinks he should apologize. Evidently, he was tearing up in the meeting. Why is he tearing up? He has six questions. If you want to apologize to your co-anchors, do it. But he read the book. The guy has, evidently, he's got his first wife and his kids are in Israel. Why would he not take it personal? So, I mean, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. I'm busy at that time. But he was very calm, and I don't think the author was upset at all.
No.
I think he likes this.
Look, they both handled it pretty well. It was, and I get what you're saying, because when I was watching, I thought, oh, okay, Gail and the other dude are kind of sitting on the sidelines. Tony's taking charge here because he's got some questions. They even mentioned his body language. But at the end of the interview, it was a lighthearted exchange and goodbye. He obviously knows him very well. It would have been reckless and journalistic malpractice had he not conducted the interview in that fashion, considering the topic. Right. And considering the day, by the way, the week.
And look, you don't think Israel should exist? I mean, his argument, I would love to have had that argument with this guy, had this challenge, because his idea is, well, everyone's pro-Israel, so I want to be pro-Palestinian. I mean, that's basically it. And he feels like he wants to be the oppressed. It's the same mindset, less civil, of these idiots in Columbia, these idiots at Harvard, these jerks stopping on the parkways, pro-Palestinian, the oppressed. The white people stink. America is our bullies. We don't deserve this land. We don't deserve this country where, we have fake freedoms over here. And, you know, I'm so upset about their mindset. Here's what I'm encouraged by. We're all done with it. Most Americans are done with that attitude. We're done with the self-loathing. We're done with we're done pretending that the Israelis might have, the Palestinians might have a point. The Palestinians want to be rid of the monsters at Hamas. The Lebanese want to be rid of Hezbollah. The Saudis in the Middle East want to be rid of Iran. We are trying to find their point of view. That is we're pretending the bad guys have a point. They don't. And the people that have to deal with them on a daily basis, they're fed up. And they wonder why we're so tolerant. And believe me, Saudi Arabia and these guys, they're not coming against Israel for a reason, because Israel's right. They can't believe what Israel's done to Hezbollah. And then Iran is scared to death that they're coming for their oil wells, their military bases, and for the Grand Ayatollah. And they have a right to be. Take them all out.
Absolutely. What's coming up on Saturday night, Brian?
I'm going to take the rally. So I'll be getting out, and I'm going to have Kimberly Strassel joining me at the end to wrap it up and tell me what she thinks, because she wrote a great column last week saying this is what Trump's still not doing. And I loved it because he's right. She's right. He's maximizing the people that like him, and he's not opening up to the people that are thinking about liking him. And I want to get that perspective and see if he includes it in the rally. So we'll be live.
Awesome. Have fun with that. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll talk next week.
Go get him more.
All right, take care. That's Brian Kilmeade. His show, by the way, on Saturday night airs at 8 p.m. Central here in the Midwest, One Nation with Brian Kilmeade. You know, I read something today in the New York Times, Sue, and I've said this before, and it is true. I read a lot of different things from different perspectives. I watch different perspectives, which is one of the reasons I like Real Clear Politics, because if you go to the front page of RCP, you'll see a variety, of opinions on all kinds of topics of the day. Let me give you a real life example here. Wednesday, October 9th, Harris. So they just kind of collate the stories. The first story, Harris unable to answer basic questions on 60 Minutes. Dan McLaughlin, New York Post. Dan's a guest, regular guest on the show. The next one, Republicans closing message, we lie to you. A.B. Stoddard, The Bulwark. So the other side, those are the never Trumpers at The Bulwark. My former mentor, Charlie Sykes, started that. So they go kind of back and forth. They put all the opinions up there, and you can kind of choose what you read. So the New York Times kind of hooked me this morning. They had a piece that said 65 doctors, nurses, and paramedics, what we saw in Gaza. And there's a guy by the name of Dr. Feroz Sidwa, who is a trauma and general surgeon who worked in Gaza from March to April. And this is pretty harrowing, some of the stuff in here. I worked as a trauma surgeon in Gaza from March 25th to April 8th. I volunteered in Ukraine and Haiti. I grew up in Flint, Michigan. He gives the background, blah, blah, blah. He said, nearly every day I was there, I saw a new young child who had been shot in the head or chest, virtually all of whom went on to die, 13 in total. At the time, I assumed this had to be the work of a particularly sadistic soldier located nearby. But after returning home, I met an emergency physician who had worked in a different hospital and said this: I couldn't believe the number of kids I saw shot in the head. To my surprise, he responded, yeah, me too, every single day. Now, they go on and they list, and there's all these people, 44 doctors, nurses, and paramedics that saw multiple cases of preteen children who have been shot in the head or chest in Gaza. And they all report on this. I saw several children shot with high velocity bullet wounds in both the head and the chest. But what's missing from all this is the evil and the terror that was inflicted upon the Israeli citizens, including women and children, when they were raped and tortured last year, a year ago, during October 7th. So while I don't know what's going on with the kids that are being shot, and we don't want innocent people to be shot, we also know that Hamas uses as their headquarters hospitals, apartment buildings, residential areas. So how would the New York Times have covered this, for example, in during World War II, right? With probably a lot of innocent German people. There were innocent people all across Eastern and Western Europe that died. And around the planet in World War II. But it was the Nazis who kind of started it, wasn't it? They were trying to invade the rest of Europe and take over the world. And they were doing things that were horrifying. Now, we didn't know the extent of all that until the end of the war. But in this particular situation, there's a lot of empathy in this New York Times piece for the children. And there should be, because these are innocent kids, young. I have a 9.5-year-old. So I don't know why people are being shot in the head. But it's this effort in the legacy media, in the New York Times and some of these publications, to say, you know what, we have to show that the Israelis do really, really bad things too. We're going to forget what happened a year ago and why they have a mission to save their people and their entire country. So it's interesting the way that journalism works, or supposedly works, because I'd like to see the same story with 64 nurses and paramedics and ER doctors in Israel, talking about what's happened over there. I don't think we're going to see that, though. I really don't. Audio cut of the day is coming up. I was just watching during a break a video of a dog being rescued down in Florida. And so it got me thinking about all the animals in North Carolina and other areas in Georgia and in Florida. And, you know, in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, I was when I first came back here to St. Louis, this would have been probably 2007 or so. When was Katrina? Do you remember?
No.
Okay, let's look that up, first of all, for point of reference. But I had a great sponsor out in the Chesterfield Valley, Petropolis. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They board dogs, and it's a great facility.
2005.
Okay, so this would have been 2000. I moved here in 2006, so it could have been 2006, 2007. I was out of Petropolis, and they had an event that I was helping promote, but they also had some cats for adoption, and there was this big, beautiful Maine Coon mix. I don't know if you know Maine Coons.
I do. They're huge.
Yeah, they are. But this one was a mix, so he wasn't quite as big as a purebred. But he was from New Orleans. And there was a group here in St. Louis. Nancy Lupia was her name. I don't even know if she's still around. Felines Forever was the organization. And they rescued cats from, you know, Louisiana in the aftermath of Katrina. And I looked at that. It was a hot day. And this poor cat was in the cage, and he was panting. And I'm like, I cannot leave without this cat. And I went rogue on Becky. She was still, I'm not even sure. She was out of town for some reason. And I'm like, I got a cat. Now, we had two cats at the time, so I was bringing cat number three.
Yeah, but you had to, Mark. I'm totally with you.
And you know what? He was a big, ginormous cat, and just such a great cat, and we lost him a couple of years ago, but that was from Hurricane Katrina. All right, I do have something for... Well, I better get started here. I'm going to run out of time, because I have something good for Audio Cut of the Day, so let me do it here. Stand by. Playback
ready. Now, the Audio Cut of the Day.
Okay, let me frame this a little bit, because when I was trying to figure out who these guys were, I found some audio today from this podcast that Trump was on. And I thought, well, this is kind of funny, and there's some good audio here, so I want to, you know, look into it. So when I Googled the podcast, I find this article from The New Republic, which is a lefty, you know, publication out there. And they do this whole story about how Trump goes on this this comedy website with Andrew Schultz and this other guy that I can't pronounce his name. And it was a terrible, disastrous appearance. Well, you make the call, because He's just kind of chatting up, and these guys think it's hilarious.
I can come back to exactly where I started. Now, someday when you don't come back to where you started,
you're Biden.
Then you say, no, but the weave is the way. When you're telling, like a story, I was telling a story.
So he's talking about the weave. He says he doesn't ramble, and, you know, people accuse him of rambling. He said, I don't ramble, I weave.
At a rally the other day in front of thousands of people, and I started off, and then
you were weaving
something in the story, I actually mentioned Air Force One. It was Air Force One was there. So I mentioned Air Force One, and then I said how I got $1.6 billion off the price of Air Force One. So, but then you have to come back to the story. Where was Air Force One taken? So anyway, I do a weave. I call it the weave. And some people think it's so genius, but the bad people, what they say is, you know, he was rambling.
Yeah.
It's not a ramble. There's no rambling.
This is a weave.
This is a weave. I call it a weave. Good name. I'm not sure. That's another name. We had fake news. Yeah. We came up with lots of names.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the weave is, I think we should make the weave a part of that stable.
So they think it's funny. They're kind of joking with him. Here's another segment of it. He's talking about some of the nicknames that he's given to some of his, you know, opposing political types.
Jack. You're TikTok,
TikTok Jack.
TikTok Jack.
TikTok. You know, this is a little new world. I call him, his name is Jack. I call him TikTok Jack. I'm good with names, you know.
You are. You're very good with names.
And Pocahontas.
Yeah.
We have names.
What about, and there was, you, Tampon Tim was good. What about, is
the
that?
The problem with Tampon Tim, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
In other words.
It's a mouthful.
It's a lot. Yeah. Tampon. And you can't stutter it through when you call it. It's really a lousy word to say.
Yeah.
But it's quite accurate.
It is quite accurate, actually.
There are some, like, comrade Kamala. It's a little hard to say. She's comrade because she's obviously a communist.
Yeah.
She's horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
So I call her comrade.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not bad. But when you put the names together, it's a little, you got to be able to pume. No, you got to be able to put it out there.
I love it.
But we have a lot of good ones. A lot of them I can't go into with you because some of my best ones are from the Republican primaries.
And
they're all friends of mine now.
So if you, and this I completely stumbled across this New Republic article, and they completely manipulate it. You want to talk about journalistic malpractice. At the end, they say Trump's disastrous appearance comes as his team launches criticism at Kamala Harris. That was anything but a disastrous appearance. They were all laughing and joking, and he was actually being real, which is part of his appeal to, like, regular Americans because they see through the phoniness that exists on the other side with Kamala Harris. So I thought that was outstanding, and I can't believe. Well, I can believe because I highlight this bias all the time. Don't believe the fake news. The media is, in fact, sadly, the enemy of the people. Sue, have a great night.
You too.
We'll see you tomorrow at 3.
Get more at 971talk.com. Get more at 971talk.com.